Welcome to the Shutdown Fullcast. Lo and behold, if you're hearing my voice, then this podcast has made it not only to college season, but into college season. We're over the wire, folks. We are now the wire separating us from the safety of the off season. No, it's live fire.
What do you think a wire is for?
It's to separate you from the trench from no man's land.
Are you Catherine Zeta-Jones in Entrapment?
Yeah, that's exactly what I mean. Sean Connery is trying to seduce me, but I think old
men are gross. Are you wearing a cat suit right now?
He is. I always wear a cat suit. This is the trick.
But like a big fluffy fuzzy one.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. With a tail and everything.
Mr. Mistopheles ass.
Are you Tony the Tiger?
You
oh,
what?
No. Bitch, he's Rum Tum Tugger.
Congratulations on your new bowl game, Spencer.
Thank you. It'll be okay. Not great. It'll be okay.
I'm so tired.
The bowl game. It's mediocre. That's what I want him to say. Just like roar
I out. Love going to the middle of the desert in December and eating lots of corn and milk.
And sugar. There's plenty of sugar. Don't worry.
Big old milky bowl of I don't know what Frosted Flakes are made of. Bran.
Yeah, why didn't they call it the cereal bowl, you shitbirds?
What did the Frosted Flakes bowl used to be?
Oh, man, I don't know.
Don't Tony the Tiger Bowl?
I'm sorry, yes. The Tony the Tiger Bowl.
Because he has formed his own separate subsidiary to sponsor this bowl. Frosted Flakes and its partner corporation have nothing to do with it. It's just Tony the Tiger.
this is his...
Welcome to Tony the Tiger's sovereign citizen movement.
It's grift.
He's gone completely rogue. They don't even know how to shut it down. The folks at Frosted Flakes Corp, they're pulling their hair out right now.
Well, he saw Clive and Bundy, and he was like, "This is my moment."
I'm excited for the feds to be like, "Can we indict a cereal mascot because he's embezzling? He is doing that."
It is an Arizona bowl game. Little bit of a history.
You know,
that.
Some of us saw John Junker and was like, man, we were born a decade too late, really, to get into bowl grift. Some of us saw John Junker and saw the future instead of the past.
This could be, I think if I had to get a former corporate mascot to be the front for my obvious fraud of a bowl game that I used to launder money.
You could just say bowl game.
No, I'd use the Noid, right?
Not Captain Crunch, really.
No. The cereal thing's now going to be too obvious. I got to pivot. I got to move away from that, right?
I see. So you're going to go with a mascot that hasn't been used in, I would say, at least 25 years?
Man, the Noid had a video game, though.
Yeah.
So did the 7-Up Spot.
Noid is already a villain? Game? Like, who trusts the Noid?
Mm.
They're going to be all over. I think Captain Crunch is better. He has a military title.
Or if you don't want to go cereal, go Grimace, because he already has a criminal in his circle, so they'll say, well, they didn't go Hamburglar, so it's probably not him. And he can hide things in his weird body. That's all money in there. That's a human man, but he's just swallowed a bunch of cash and cocaine.
They'll just think, oh, that's WKU Big Red's cousin.
WKU, remember, Big Red, the only mascot I know of that appeared in Italian copyright court to defend his name in costume to defend his name and image. Western.
I am confident the WVU Mountaineer will have that happen one day too.
I'm thinking that's Bulgarian court.
Hey,
someplace kind of north of the Balkans, you know?
Hey, listen, man, Sicily's fun. You don't know.
It's mountainous. I think it'll be somewhere where it's settled by duel. I think that's the only way you get the Mountaineer to show up.
Well, he better make the first shot, because that second shot's going to take a minute. Hold on! Back, 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 back. Goddamn musket.
It's not musketeer.
Yeah. The week zero, we actually had football, which is thrilling.
Kind of.
Yeah. No, it was great. I mean, as horrifying as it was to watch Florida Miami.
There we are.
Had the full spectrum of football.
We really did.
Because I joked at one point that Florida Miami was just a warm up for Arizona Hawaii. And that turned out not to be a joke. Because remember, we don't tell jokes on this podcast. That actually came true.
Yeah, the first game was someone called it Slappers Only Football. That was pretty accurate. And then the second FBS game was Rocket Launchers Only Football.
Just nothing but big hits, man. That's all we did for Arizona, Hawaii. The cake after the unnecessarily nutritious main course,
I think Slappers Only is actually unfair. I think it's more proximity mines, but you get blown up by your own.
I mean, that's just proximity mines in my experience.
And, like, it's not like you forgot where you laid them.
Ha! There we go! Fuck! Corner! Shit!
Like, Miami, you put the mines on your offensive line, and then you tried to walk forward.
Proximity lines.
All four screens with Manny Diaz going, damn it! Who's odd job?
Like, Miami stuck Jaren Williams behind five proximity mines.
You know, you put like a Klieg light behind him. Dan Mullen is kind of odd job shaped.
I mean,
and
Dan,
he is always wearing a hat.
If I ask you to imagine Dan Mullen in a turtleneck and a very heavy blazer, does he not look like somebody who gets beat up as the minion of a Bond villain and or somebody who gets kicked in the face by Tony Jaa? I mean, he does have that look.
Sure.
He's a little henchy.
Also, he can make noises like,
he does, you know? Yeah. What do you want me to do?
Oh, okay.
Oh, God, Invisible Tommy Gun. He does kind of have that, like, 1930s gangster look. Hey, what are you guys doing here? Huh?
Yeah.
Pulls up to the bar. Milk, make it a double. Put it in a dirty glass.
Give me an egg cream. Yeah, this was.
Welcome to our college football podcast, which now has games to talk about.
Actual games. You mentioned Jaren Williams' name, Jason. Jaren Williams looked great, man. This is me. I'm going to be as positive as I can. He did fine. That's a freshman. That is a red shirt freshman, correct? He did start against Savannah State last year.
Didn't we all?
But that is a first-time starter against a very game defense that enjoys putting a lot of pressure on the quarterback, performing brilliantly behind an offensive line that was best described as really feisty paper mache.
The offensive line looked like what you might expect to see at, say, the Citadel, like an especially small military option school.
Yeah.
Like, one of those dudes had to be, like, 240.
Yeah, I don't think the right...
The Citadel with mono, I think, is probably a fair description.
Yeah, I don't think that Miami's right tackle weighed more than 260 pounds.
How many sacks did Florida finish with? Was
10.
It 10?
10, and I think 16 tackles for loss.
That's...
10.
That's not healthy, man.
No,
that's too many.
It actually feels like unhealthy for both sides. Like, at some point, Florida's tacklers are going to be very tired.
And it's not like Miami, you know, unveiled a crazy hurry up, throw the ball a ton off. They only threw the ball 30 times. So if you're telling me we'll eliminate scrambles and all that, but there were plenty of other places where he got hit on some of those 30 dropbacks
right,
as well.
So they're rope it opening them, but in true Miami fashion, we have lost the dope.
So 30 passes plus 10 sacks plus, so they tried to throw like 43 times.
Yeah.
There's a lot. I know we started off talking about Miami and to say all the good things, Jaren Williams, if they can keep him upright, or at least, you know, the rest of their schedule doesn't feature a defense, it's really going to put as much sort of stress and pressure and chaos into his life as Florida's will. If that's
you hear
the case,
that Duke defense, Spencer's calling you out.
I have definitely, I'm just going to go out on a limb and say, I don't think my beloved Pitt Panthers are going to put 10 sacks worth of pressure on the Miami Hurricanes. Now, this
okay,
works for
we'll
me.
We'll see what Bethune-Cookman can do.
This works for me two ways, by the way. The Pitt super weapon, charging up even more fiercely now that I've said that.
Any day now.
They're just going to go off. And in addition to that, if they only surrender half the pressure, they still give up 5 sacks a game. And that's a lot of punishment. On the other side of the ball, Miami, man, Trajan Bandy's awesome. Trajan Bandy and Shaq Quarterman. Oh, there's a lot of
those are both Crash Bandicoot characters.
They are. They're Crash Bandicoot characters, and they are just as bouncy and enthusiastic in their pursuit of the ball carrier. Because my God, they were fun to watch. Trajan Bandy is just a battle of a corner. I don't even know what the word is. He was making tackles in the run game He was like recognizing plays well before they came his way. Just, yeah, he was a handful. He was a mess. He hit a lot of those, he had a lot of those short tackles where Florida failed to convert. They get the ball out to Tony or they get the ball out to P. Ryan and get tackled like a half a yard short. That was usually Trajan Bandy leading the way on those and absolutely sticking people. So, like, they were fun to watch. I know Miami fans might get slightly stressed about how that game went. And there's reasons for concern, namely your 175-pound right tackle and how they'll hold up over the course of a season. But overall, I was like, no, this, there's stuff here. Like, they've got a lot to work with.
I don't think that. I think Miami fans probably took it in stride. I mean, it's not like they attacked Florida's band director after the game and put him in a chokehold.
It's not like
I didn't actually hear about this until a few minutes ago. Ryan, do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, let's brief us, please.
Like, I've only seen the sort of bare minimum about it, but Florida's band was heading back after the game, I assume to the buses or whatever. And hold on, I'm going to pull up an actual article here. So, yeah, the band members were walking to the bus. A female Miami fan tried to cut through the group. The director went to stop that person. And when he did, somebody else grabbed him behind in a chokehold and threw him on the pavement.
Sure.
So,
bro, I've been taking MMA. Just a little, you know. I just had to do something. You got to control the situation, you know. Body position. Kumite. You know, that kind of stuff. I know a lot about it. I don't want to drop any technical stuff on you.
Shit goes down in Orlando, man.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say I failed the police academy, mostly because I was thrown out before final exams, so.
I mean, I opted to leave.
It's more of a DNF. More of a, like, pending situation.
That's true. See, I just needed something else.
Speaking of Miami's defense, which played pretty well, so about 4.5 yards is considered an average rush. How many of the 6 Gators who carried the ball averaged better than that on the night?
This answer. 4.5 is what he's looking for.
I don't think any of them did, because I remember looking and seeing P. Ryan average like 4. Nope.
There was
you're forgetting one very important.
Oh, the
exception.
Punter.
The punter.
Yeah, the punter.
Your punter is your only above average runner.
That's fine.
Well, I mean, if that's how we got to do it.
That's how you got to do it. Well, Dan Mullen likes going for it on fourth, so this dude's going to get his carries.
Can we talk about the absurdity that was the last drive?
Yes.
Yeah.
So Spencer and I have been talking about this most of the day. And I just want to walk everybody through, in case you didn't watch the game, here are the exact sequence of events. So Miami gets the ball after a just crushingly dumb in timing and in selection interception on Florida's first play after stopping Miami on downs, I believe. During that interception or afterwards, they get a 15-yard unsportsmanlike conduct penalty for excessive celebration.
Can we go back?
Sorry,
one thing?
Please.
Yeah. Not to interrupt your flow. When does this drive start? At what time mark does the final Miami possession start?
I want to say it starts with about 4 minutes left in
the
game.
4.5, I think.
No. Why would I ask you the time if it were not a fascinating time?
Okay, it's 4:20.
That's correct.
It starts
Thank
at
you.
4:20.
Bruh.
I apologize. Okay, so Miami starts with the ball at the Florida 40. They rush for a 1 yard loss. They fumble the ball, but they recover it. But none of that counts anyway because there's a 15-yard illegal block penalty. They complete a pass for -1 yards. They have a sack fumble that is curiously recovered for a 4-yard gain. There's a delay of game. There's a 7-yard sack. And now it's 4th and 34. Spencer, what happened on 4th and 34?
Florida committed pass interference, thus giving Miami an automatic first down on 4th and 34.
My God, that's Jane Costin's music.
It was probably pass interference well past the line to gain, though, right?
No, it was behind it, where you don't actually have to commit that. Yeah.
Cool. So this has moved. Now Miami has successfully moved back to the Florida 35 at this point.
That's better.
The Florida 49. They complete a pass for negative 2 yards. They have an incomplete pass. They get another pass interference on 3rd and 12. This is now, at this point in the drive, they have snapped the ball. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. This is, I believe, the 9th snap. They get their first offensive yards, a 12-yard pass completion. That's followed by an incomplete pass, a sack fumble that Miami recovers again for a loss of 2. That's the 3rd fumble on this drive, forced by Florida, recovered by Miami. There's another incomplete pass with pass interference, except that flag gets picked up, and then the last play of the game is an incomplete pass. This journey started at the Florida 40, went back to the Florida 43, went back to the Florida 35, then back to the Miami 49, and then all the way to the Florida 26, where it ended. Mm-hmm.
So can I give you the summary?
Confusing.
That's correct. That's 10 actual counted on the sheet plays for 14 yards that covered, something like at this point, 50 yards. 14 yards of actual offense. Most of it gifted in the form of penalties that did not need to happen. On the upside, there was a guy named Jeremiah Moon on Florida. Jeremiah Moon!
I am really excited for his tent revival tour.
Y'all come on down and listen to the Reverend Moon.
I had a question for our two Gators on here.
Sure.
On a scale of 1 to 100, how would you grade this game? With obviously 100 being the best possible game.
That feels like about a 68. Maybe we won.
On 1 to 10?
Out of 1 to 100.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Just checking.
But yeah, about a 68, because I went back and rewatched it. And because remember, football is mostly empty space. You got a fast forward button. You can rewatch a game real fast. And a lot of this made a lot of sense. Like, all right, nobody in Florida rushed the ball particularly well, but they weren't super committed to it, because the smart thing to do when you have a bunch of really good receivers and Miami has got a strong front is to pass. And that's actually, like, when I look, Franks missed some guys in the passing game, but they were there and they're open. That's something that, like, yeah, you probably fix that and work on it. I'm not saying that you're going to get any kind of Baker Mayfield transformation out of Franks, because at times he will let the ball wander. He's a libertarian passer sometimes. He's just going to let it.
If you love something, let it go.
Yeah. He's going to let the market decide where the ball goes. That happens sometimes, okay?
But then literally again, the invisible hand.
the invisible hand passing the ball downfield, which.
That's what an incompletion is.
That's what that interception was, right? He's like, I'm going to throw it away. And the market was like, nope, son, we're putting that up for sale.
They should start doing that at Michigan football games. Pass broken up by Adam Smith.
I just checked. There actually is an Arena League football player named Adam Smith who played at Western Kentucky.
Amazing.
Arena Bowl champion. 2-time first team All-Arena in 2015 and 16.
Hey, he was with the Buccaneers. What's more free market than piracy?
He's from Murfreesboro, but I suppose I didn't really have to tell you that.
But I don't, like, looking back, there's a lot of sloppiness, but Franks was protected pretty well in the pass game. When he made mistakes, it was because he was leaving pockets that were pretty clean. He wasn't really stepping up. There were guys open. Receivers did big things. I mean, Tony had a huge play. Josh Hammond had a huge play. I don't feel that bad about it, especially when I consider what the defense could look like, considering how they looked in a game where they got 10 sacks on a bad line. But if they're only putting up half that kind of production, that's still enough. So I feel really good about that. And in addition to that, we have a punter who runs like he's going to be. we have a punter who can apparently tear ass faster than any of our running backs, and we have good running backs. So I don't feel that bad. 68 out of 100.
One shy of 69. They got to earn that. Ryan, how you feel?
It wasn't a nice game. No.
I'll give it 75, because it could have been, like, it's right in, like, that game could have been much better for Florida. They were looked in control early. It looked like, okay, they're going to win this in, like, pretty comfortable fashion, whatever. It also could have been much worse, because the only reason that Florida is even in a position to force Miami's hand on the last two drives of the game is because – Miami misses an easy field goal, like a 28-yarder or something like that, after they run their own fake, which should have come back for holding, except Florida lit the, I think it was the holder. They lit him up out of bounds, or maybe it was the kicker, I don't remember who, to extend that drive. And Florida also got gifted extremely good field position, which led to a touchdown on a muffed Miami punt. So, like, there was the potential for all things was there. This could have there. It's not that hard to say this could have been a 17-20 point Florida win or a 17 point Florida loss. Like, all of those things are in there. So I feel very comfortable being like, okay, you can have like a straight C. I'm not going to give you anything stronger or weaker than that.
So do you want to know how you two homers compare to the objective cold hand of reason as far as game grades here?
Sure.
Yep. I think because, you know, if there's one thing people say about Spencer and I, it's that we're too up on Florida. Yeah, so I'm really excited to have
Many
us taking down
that
peg.
About you.
So ESPN's FPI actually gives game scores for each game. It's the game control thing that the playoff committee mangles sometimes. And people make jokes about FPI, but it performs fine. It gave the Gators an 85.
Okay.
Not bad. So, I mean, I think you look at the box, Miami recovered 80% of the fumbles.
Right.
That's not sustainable. Like, to rip off an old Bill C stat, there were eight defenders got their hands on passes. Miami got two interceptions. Florida got none. You would expect more like one each, something like that. Like,
One of Florida's led to a Miami touchdown.
Yeah. Like, Miami, it feels insane to say about a game in which so much went wrong for them, but they got most of the bounces, you know.
This
should have been a pretty comfortable Florida win.
I would like to say this game, I think, was a perfect summation of why Florida fans don't generally want to play Miami. And Miami fans love to say, like, oh, you're scared. And they're not wrong, but it's not like scared in a, oh no, we might lose way. It's scared of in a like, oh no, what if the sewer line backs up kind of way.
You're not.
It's like, it's just going to be unpleasant no matter the outcome, no matter how much it ends up costing, whether we have to tear down the house or move, or whether it's like relatively, it only takes a week to fix. The sewer line's still backed up. That's the Florida-Miami game. It's always just going to be a backed-up sewer line.
It's not that you're scared of the Hurricanes. It's that you're scared of Gators versus Hurricanes, right?
Yes.
The series itself.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's heartening because, you know, we are notoriously sunshine pumpers when it comes to Florida football. So 85.
All right. Once again, you're too down on your team.
We should be more enthusiastic, he says, weeks before another upset by Kentucky. Okay, cool.
It's okay. Spencer's truly a Hawaii fan anyway. Thanks to Magma McDonald.
Magma McDonald. If you want to get your family
Mag-Mac
out of this prison, Magma, you're going to have to shoot me with this tennis ball gun.
Okay.
Last night, Ryan and I spent maybe a little too much time trying to put Cole McDonald, Hawaii's charismatic young quarterback with the dreads, in an American Gladiators type situation that I've decided is some kind of American Gladiators dystopian drama where he has to rescue his family from super hell jail by performing basic American Gladiators tasks. Kind of
taken, but with big foam Q-tips.
Yeah, and some Running Man thrown in there.
Taken with a Q.
Right.
We were joking that that's like a that's a big. We were joking that it was a warm-up. Not a warm-up. Arizona-Hawaii rule. Cole McDonald, I believe, threw 5 touchdowns and 4 interceptions. Perfect line.
A perfectly balanced 4-4.
No, oh, the Thanos line. Wow.
You know, he
gave you the that's a Wendy's combo or something, right? The 4-4.
that's Cole McDonald was going to keep you even, all right, y'all? He's going to take you out of the game and bring you back in. But a joy to watch, and Hawaii still runs like an old school run and shoot, so they're hitting like insane like go routes and these massive comeback routes that they just kind of, you know, feel out in the middle of the field, and occasionally they give the ball to a gigantic 260-pound running back on draw plays, which is hilarious because it's always like, ha, gotcha, said the rhino.
Holly, I think you are one of the most foremost experts on Pac-12 After Dark. Mm-hmm. How did this stack up to the legacy of that sainted hashtag?
Well, it was a little bit puzzling to have a Pac-12 After Dark that kicks off in full daylight and finishes in near full daylight. But yeah, this game had everything. It was, oh, Arizona's going to get boat raced. Oh, Arizona was just sleepy and they've caught up to their body clock confusion. Oh no, everyone on both sides might be very bad, and that's even better. Oh no, they're both just about the same amount of bad, which is not all that bad, but hey, Arizona, what happens to your schedule when you go home? Nothing bad, I bet. Ooh. Ooh. That's my emotional bouncy ball.
This was something that we were discussing in our Slack before this, but this was really bad for Arizona in ways that I don't think I fully realized, right?
Not last night, no. Not until I looked at the schedule today.
Yeah. Because I thought, oh, losing on the island. That's completely explicable. Because Hawaii typically performs very well at home. And then Bud and Jason and Ryan, they learned me up on why this was actually super bad for Arizona.
Yeah, like coming into the year, you're going for 6 wins. That's it. And we talked about it a little bit, how the early part of the season, I think Alex was on here talking about how, like, go for 5-0 and then just try to cling and get that last win. Well, that's off the table now, because one of your 3 or 4 likeliest wins, you should have gotten your ass kicked. You got pretty lucky to lose by a touchdown.
Yeah, and the rest of the schedule?
The rest of the schedule, we have, okay, you'll be favored against Northern Arizona, Texas Tech at home, and Oregon State at home. Yep. you got to host Utah. You got to host Washington. And you could lose all of your road games. And then there's UCLA. Who the fuck knows? This could be a 4-win or 3-win team.
Can we agree that they still will probably unexpectedly just light the fuck out of somebody who on paper you'd be like, wait, what? Oregon lost by 30 to Arizona?
Yeah, Utah's rolling in at 10-0 and then they lose to Arizona.
Utah's so gassed right now too, because they are now Lee Corso's pick. They are now everyone's like momentum pick for a possible playoff slot. They are now everyone's favorite pick for a Pac-12 championship. And I feel like that irrational exuberance has now hit the point where nothing makes more sense than playing a piss poor Arizona team that just wails up out of nowhere and clobbers them to destroy their home.
Arizona's your cousin who ruins Thanksgiving.
Like, who's going to puke on the turkey?
And so is Arizona State. That's the best part. That's where they spent Thanksgiving together.
They're just like the inconveniently timed arrest twins, right? Like, yeah. We were going to make graduation on time, but somebody had to blow vape smoke in the cop's face.
My favorite Arizona stat of the day. Did we see the one that Reddit CFB tweeted by chance?
No.
So can you guess which Power 5 team has lost to the most non-Power 5 teams in the playoff era?
Is it Arizona?
Very close.
So close. No.
Number one is Kansas with 7.
Right.
Number 2 is Arizona with 6.
Wow.
Ahead of, you know, Illinois. Rutgers. Yeah.
That's the thing about Arizona. And
Wazoo has lost to like multiple FCS teams and is still behind.
Yeah, but those always are the harbinger of a really good season for them, right? It's as if Washington State actually forgets how to play football, goes into the game, and is immediately reminded, right? Like they're the they're the amnesiac football team, right? Like, where am I waking up to?
Tattoos all over their body, throw ball down. What?
They do the thing from the boxing movie where it's like the 9th round, you gotta cut me. Except they do it in round 1.
Hey, we're going to the hotel. It's not even fight day.
I gotta bleed to feel
cut
it.
Me!
You gotta we just got off the fucking plane.
Cut me, I said.
My favorite stat from this game actually is Jason, who is the current leader in FBS in passer rating?
It's my beautiful blonde dreadlocked state tattooed Cole McDonald who got benched through four picks, and he is still your number one quarterback in the country. Because his passes do not hit the ground is the key. He completed 71%, which is awesome. And if you factor his interceptions, it completed like 76%.
I was going to say, his completion percentage was actually much higher.
Yeah. He keeps the ball clean. That's what matters most.
His interceptions, sublime, by the way, because you would think if
he
you had thrown...
hard.
If you think
goes
you would
all in.
Yeah, you think if you would throw four picks... That would be misread, maybe a tipped ball or two, maybe, you know, just a great play by a DB.
Receiver runs a wrong route.
Sure, sure, especially
there
in the system.
There was one tip that went against him,
yeah.
But there were also a couple dropped picks.
There was one where he hit a quarterback in the helmet.
He's awesome. I love him. He's one of the most college football players of all time.
He has rocketed up the people's Heisman list.
Yeah, absolutely.
I hope he gets his doctorate and sticks around forever.
Yeah, Nick Rolovich, if you're listening to this, don't bench this young man. We need him.
Or do. Whatever it takes.
Let him stay for 8 years. The NCAA can't afford a flight to Hawaii. You're fine.
Three out of the four picks he threw, to complete the thought, directly at the defensive back. I mean, like, between the one and the zero, right? Just, like, right in the middle. Just an amazing...
Like a fucking challenge.
He's Patrick Swayze's character in Point Break, 100%. Into the waves, bro!
Bodie would throw that. Yeah. Adore him. Adore that, and I adore that Khalil Tate, who now appears to be fully mobile and ready to show us and dazzle us with the talent that he displayed in the 2017 season, all for a possible 4-8 Arizona team.
Woo!
Yeah, baby, get it. Let's get our Sisyphus on. Khalil Tate had 600 total yards of offense in a 72-48 loss to Oregon State. Yeah, headlines that might happen. That might be something you read.
That's also people's Heisman behavior. We saw one of the most important unimportant games of the year, basically.
We're gonna look back on that and feel so honored that we watched this game, right? Like, we'll be like, I can't believe that we watched the president and a future Nobel Prize winner face off as QBs. The first man on Mars versus our first international president, Cole McDonald.
I just love that in the first 8 hours of FBS action of 2019, we got the complete extremes of the college football experience, right? Like the ugliest offensive game possible and the ugliest defensive game possible.
Yeah, some people thought that when I said Florida and Miami should open the season every year just to remind us what we've been missing, some people thought that I meant that sarcastically. No.
No.
Absolutely not. This is what you think I'd rather watch Vandy, South Carolina?
You think we'd rather watch, like, decent football?
Absolutely not.
Get that shit out of my face.
The game-saving tackle for Hawaii made by Manly Williams. You probably already know that if you're listening to this podcast. Maybe you don't. Here are some additional Manly Williams facts. One, his nickname is Pumbaa. Which means it's entirely yes. possible after stopping Arizona from winning this game, he launched into Hakuna Matata. And I really hope he did.
It means no worries.
Out a big old pig fart.
Two, he has an uncle
Hakuna
named Manly.
Pig-farta.
He has an uncle Manly.
Uncle
that is
Manly.
Somebody in his family.
Damn.
And who also played at the University of Hawaii. Three.
His name was Uncle Manly at the time.
Three. He has an older brother. He's Manly. Remember, his older brother, Lance.
We play this game.
Damn.
We play this game sometimes. We played it before with a corn dog and tater, and I forget what else. But if you are out there and you have a relative with the Christian name of Uncle, please let us know.
Yeah,
I know you're out there,
Uncle Manly, and this dude's brother, Lance. Damn. Been naming children wrong.
Should we talk about our other project for the season?
Yeah, why not?
Okay, so some of you are already playing the Bold Predictions game. Hawaii winning meant that if you had Hawaii gets a victory over a Pac-12 team, congratulations. You've got your 1 point for that. But we are separately at Banner Society. Eight of us are putting together basically an emotional investment that we will individually make for the season and track over the course of the season. We're probably going to have this out. Well, whatever I say will be off by at least a week. So let's say tomorrow.
Christmas.
And let's hope that that works in our favor. It won't. It won't be. Holly, let's start with yours because it is an interesting choice that you've decided to put your heart into.
I used to have this thing. Let's back up for a second and let's talk about picking. Hello, Shutdown Full Cat. We acknowledge you. Y'all, we are recording it. Listen, we're recording at night for the first time this season, and he is online. He is alive and online. He's usually very sleepy when we record in the off season in the middle of the afternoon. And I tried to bribe him with treats in the pre-show to keep quiet, and he housed them all immediately and just ran in here and started hollering again.
I mean, it doesn't work with Spencer. Why would it work with this cat?
Oh, I was talking about Spencer.
Okay, sorry.
No, let those cats holler.
We've had versions of this discussion before, and they usually pertain to the SEC West. But every year for, you know, the decade or more that I sat in the ballroom of SEC Media Days, like, it would bother me just picking Alabama, you know, to win. Because there's no way out of this quagmire, right? Like, either Bama wins and you were correct, or you pick someone else and it's like, oh, you're just trying to be cute because Bama's going to win. And heading into a season that looks, if anything, chalkier than last season, which, as we've previously discussed, was the chalkiest chalk, chalk, chalk season up until what, the second quarter of the national title game. It kind of felt the same. So I started to do what I usually do in these situations, and I'm just picking new people to win out of boredom. Georgia is boring, and Kentucky has 8 home games. And I would very much like for Kentucky to win the SEC East. I feel like I was inspired to do this when I went to look at Kentucky's schedule on Kentucky's official athletic website and saw that they had already recorded the team having a win. That win was in their spring game. They did it all out. It says UK versus University of Kentucky. Win 64-10. And I'm like, nice. Man, I like that energy. I like your... Anyway, they open with Toledo, so this may... The good news is I'll be in or out of this in a hurry in 6 days or 5 days by the time you listen to this, because they open with Toledo.
Oh, see, I'm excited for them to lose to Toledo, and that fuels them.
Oh, God, if they lose to Toledo and then go, like, undefeated in conference play, man, put that in my veins. Their draws out of the West are Arkansas and Mississippi State. They get Florida at home. They go to Georgia. They get Tennessee at home, which not like that's going to matter. They get Louisville at home. They get Missouri at home. I really just like for Kentucky to. I'm looking forward to a return to the lobster pot years of the SEC East, and I kind of just want Kentucky to ankle bite their way to the top because, oh, Jesus Christ, like, save me from having to say literally anything about Georgia football that's descriptive. It's like, oh, let me, how do I describe these flat front, no iron khakis?
You mean Jake Fromm?
Man, listen, more like Jake Fromm Office Depot. Anyway, that's mine. I have started to flail about and make, because I don't feel like there's any real virtue, especially in these incredibly chalky times we live in. There is no virtue in saying, oh, Georgia and Alabama are going to be in Atlanta in December. Yeah, probably. But God, in the meantime, isn't it more fun to root for something that would be interesting? Kentucky A&M SEC championship game.
Yeah, picking Georgia-Alabama is sort of like being the oncologist who has all the tough cases. Like, your prediction rate is great. You're not having fun.
No.
Yeah, looks like I'm right again. But, you're going
to
die.
Like, to what possible benefit, as I often say to young Alex Kirshner, to what possible benefit? Like, who benefits if I'm sitting here picking Alabama and Georgia? Who cares? I don't mind being wrong. And I don't really have anything particularly hard in my heart against University of Georgia. I just want things to be different.
Spencer, yours is not necessarily different, or at least not wildly different.
Nope. I just want to preface this by saying I am on Team Texas with 10 wins, okay? And have been on it for a long time because it's been very good to me. I believe it won me a chicken bet one year, and it has become my favorite running joke that Texas, every single year they play football, will win exactly 10 games. On the other hand, there's Texas A&M, all right, our SEC brethren, who have decided that the approach to playing football is to spend more money publicly than anyone else. That's cute, by the way, because the actual approach to winning is to spend more money everywhere, publicly and extremely privately, if you catch my drift. Now, Texas A&M and Texas both projected to have pretty good seasons. And that's why I would like to go ahead and just Riverside both of those. Because I think at least, I think they will be both be expensive disappointments. My favorite kind of thing. Because there's nothing more Texan than going, yeehaw, we're going to spend a lot of money on this. And in football, especially college football, that doesn't always work. So what I'm going
to... Does disappointment look like the same thing for both? Like, how are you... What qualifies as disappointment for each of them?
Oh, we can hit this pretty easily, right? Because okay. I think what passes for disappointment for Texas A&M after dropping... is that $70 million on Jimbo?
Probably more. Who can even keep track
of it? It's 70 mil guaranteed.
It's more.
Is it more?
It's 75.
Over 10? Or is it 75?
It's 75, I'm pretty sure.
It's a lot of money. It's enough that anything less than a national title in the first, what, 5 years? 6 years? Six would be a long time. Mm. If you want a particularly overheated hot tub of expectation, let's fast forward to if Jimbo makes it to year six without winning a serious title of some sort. That'd be real bad. And there's a lot of evidence, by the way, that A&M will leave the season with something less than a title and something more like disappointment. Because in the 21st century, since the year 2000, they've only won double-digit games once. Once! That'd be 11-2 in 2012. That particular saga required a generational talent at quarterback, at least at college, Johnny Manziel.
And a coach who just lost to Hawaii.
Yeah, we bring it full circle here, don't we? We do. So, disappointment being the norm at A&M, and with everyone going, oh man, they got Kellen Mond, Jimbo's got this all figured out. I see no reason to think any of those things are true, both given history and the fact that they play a very difficult schedule, where losing three games seems very reasonable. In fact, with that schedule, every year, losing three games seems extremely reasonable. And that's before we mention they play Clemson again this year. So, yeah. A&M, totally easy to come in at something that feels less like success and more like disappointment, even with what would objectively be a good season with this schedule. And that's before you consider, I don't know how much money y'all sank into this thing. I know you wanted the biggest pool in the neighborhood, but, you know, sorry, sinkholes got a mind of their own. You could think of it as a really big pool that goes all the way down to the aquifer.
A pool with a personality.
Yeah.
Of its own.
A surprise pool.
Yeah.
A surprise. What's better than that, y'all?
Sudden pool.
The Lord has gifted you a pool.
Hey, y'all, now we can go fracking.
Oh, man, maybe that's how Hugh Freeze hurt his back.
They don't call it unnatural gas, do they? Hugh Freeze hurt his back fracking.
Please don't use the word hole that close to you, Freeze.
You just so much say hole.
Shut your freeze hole, Ryan.
Let me tell you a little bit about the hole in my heart.
Ugh. All right, we're going to move on to Jason's.
Oh, in Texas, by the way? Oh, please. Like, they're already there with Tom Herman. They're there with anybody who runs Texas football, right? If Tom Herman wins 10 games again, right, if they go 10-2, that could still be disappointment for them, because they'd be like, oh, that's Heisman winner Sam Ehlinger right there. Should have done better than that.
Should have made the playoff with that.
Yeah. You see what the Aggies are doing? They won 9 games. They went 9-3.
I like that your prediction really is less like you're down on Texas and Texas A&M, and more you've given yourself a lot of reason to be an LSU fan this season.
That and the poison of expectation and money, we're already there. I'm already right. I just have to wait.
Bundle this with an economy on the brink of collapse and Texas and Texas A&M boosters that no longer can get the buyout money together.
Whose economy is that?
Or as the dollar collapses, they're funneling like trillions of dollars into their programs.
Right. That's how Boris Johnson becomes the new Texas head coach.
My favorite part of this is like objectively, Texas is like, this is like a 9-3 team. That's what all the numbers say. But people are putting them in the playoff. So the disappointment is baked in. It's right there.
Right.
This is going to be a fun one for Spencer to follow because I think it's going to cash.
Because no,
you think both will be? I think A&M. I think that the expectations are not high enough this year for it to cash.
Well, A&M. That's a 7 or 8 win team on paper, but
right.
Does the Aggie brain acknowledge paper? No,
absolutely not.
That's fiat currency.
That's fiat currency. That's right.
I mean, I like Aggie fans, like reasonable ones online. Yes, there are at least 4. They say like, yeah, if we go to a bowl with this schedule, fine, you know. But there's other Aggies as well. So
yeah, okay.
I mean, right, we'll
check in after they lose to Auburn or something.
No. Remember, we frame this up November 16th versus South Carolina on Military Appreciation Day.
The most holy day of all.
That's when this all unravels in a hideous 11-8 loss to South Carolina.
Jason, your storyline, you're going to be pouring your heart into.
So this one has a couple, what's the word? Tributaries that feed into it?
Sure.
When little rivers make a big river. So yep. Let's go back to 2014. Yep. All right. When ESPN SEC bias hollering became a real thing, right? SEC Network, they're hijacking the playoff. They, you know, blah, blah, blah. This became a thing because of Florida State fans who saw their undefeated team slipping in the polls. Danny Cannell's, you know, he's leading an insurgency. So on and so forth. The SEC Network.
That's Dr. Neurologist Danny Cannell.
Yeah. Now there's the Bond villain, Danny Cannell. So the SEC Network is hijacking football because SEC teams are getting into better games than they deserve. Now, flash forward to 2019, ESPN just launched another conference network, didn't they? The ACC Network. So let's see if let's cut right to it. Let's see if we can get a 4 or 5 loss team into a New Year's Six Bowl from the ACC in the first year of ESPN owning an ACC network. And then let's see if we keep the same energy that we did back when the SEC network was allegedly running things in 2014. So here's how it goes. In this year's New Year's Six setup, there are very, very few at-large spots because the conference ties, factor in the 2 games that are playoff games this time around, you have basically only 1 at-large spot left over. There's going to be a lot of top 12 teams who don't have spots in New Year's Six games, basically. The ACC sets up to have by far the funniest spot, the spot they're guaranteed, assuming Clemson makes the playoff, which is basically the safest assumption on the board, because coming into the season, the ACC team expected to win the most games was Miami with a win total over under. It got as high as 9.5 if you wanted to take the under. Let's go ahead and cut that down to 9, maybe even a little lower if you're, you know, if you got major concerns about that offensive line or whatever. The point is, maybe it's Miami, maybe it's Virginia Tech, maybe it's Virginia, maybe it's even Syracuse. You're going to have like a 4 loss team right there, ranked like 23rd or something. And even if they're 9-3, they got to go to Charlotte to lose to Clemson to become a 4 loss team. That team gets an Orange Bowl bid very likely at the expense of, you know, you could have a team ranked like 7th or 8th or 9th miss out and have to go to the you know, Citrus Bowl or whatever because of this terrible ACC team. It gets better. So there's also a citrus rule where if the orange, blah, 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 the Orange Bowl has certain stipulations that can lead to an ACC team taking the Big Ten spot in the Citrus Bowl. So now you could have yet another 5-loss ACC team stealing a spot from yet another top 15 team and kicking, you know, a Big Ten team down to, you play out the ramifications, a Big Ten team falls down to one of the Big Ten's worst bowls, which is the Red Box, right? This is the only bowl broadcast on Fox. So now, in the first year of the ESPN-owned ACC network, an ESPN-affiliated ACC team have taken two of the best bowl spots and kicked a Big Ten team down to Fox's only bowl. So now we got broadcast beef. You know, not just conferences are mad about this, but we have, you know, all of the whatever is left of Fox College football has now been poisoned as well.
Whatever is left of Fox College football.
Sorry. Also, that Red Box game that gets the one mad Big Ten team that's most screwed by all this, it's on at the same time as the Music City, so no one's even going to watch it.
Michigan State, baby. Michigan State. Nothing would be better than the Mark D'Antonio retirement game taking place in a bowl game that you can't watch.
So we're gonna get an 8-4 Virginia.
You know, that's how he would have wanted to go.
Yeah.
An 8-4 Virginia will kick an 8-4 Michigan State down to the least watched bowl.
I have one flaw with your argument, and that is that maybe the ACC network won't operate in that framework because it wasn't designed to amplify the ACC and its fortunes.
Well, I mean, my thing is, it's not even calling the ACC an ACC network a propaganda network. Like, you know.
But here's the thing. What if the ACC network is actually just something Mark Richt's wife started to get him out of the house?
So my thing is, it's not even about what they're actually doing. Because what they're actually doing is very cool and fun, right?
Yeah.
Like, they got Wes Durham. They got our boy Wes Durham. Mark Richt is awesome on air. It's about just the humor
the
of the perception.
Oh, right.
Result.
Right.
That's all I'm
right.
saying.
If you don't subscribe to our newsletter,
you should
go and do that. And Stephen Godfrey basically spent his self-appointed assignment during the Florida-Miami game was just watching Mark Richt sort of wander and not know what to do with his hands or brain during the entire ACC, like, coaches room version of that game.
It's very
Speaking
charming.
Of the ACC network, we want to come into the broadcast booth and broadcast an ACC event so you can prove your objectivity by letting us do that because we are the most objective analysts.
Does it matter that Spencer has Georgia Tech ties?
No, I mean...
He will have to be... yes, he will have to be... he cannot... He has too much skin in the game. Far, far too much.
A year and a half for a master's degree there.
Lots and lots of skin flaps.
Yeah. I think our deal's going to be a really, well, I think a good offer for them, right? We will drive ourselves to Charlotte.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So okay, you don't have to pay for that. We'll pay for our own hotel. We're going to stay with a friend. That's fine. We'll sleep in the car.
We don't even need it to be football, to be clear. Like, I think almost any sport is on the table, right?
Will they let us do a pit?
Oh, yeah. We're aiming way lower than football.
Okay, good.
No, come on. They'll let us do a pit game.
I don't think they will.
That's not football.
Can you just imagine us chanting, put pit in? Or just being the biggest pit homers imaginable and having at least like 7 Wake Forest fans become enraged at how...
I'd like to cancel my subscription!
To the ACC network. These lunatics are talking about Pitt as the greatest football team of our time.
A lot of them are yelling my dick after they yell put Pitt in.
Yeah, when we say, like, when we talk propaganda, you know, no, it's going to be a normal conference network until we get on. That's when the actual propaganda begins.
Sure.
Can I do all the good propaganda cues too? Like, some people say Pitt's the greatest football team of all time.
Many people are saying it. You hear it more and more.
More and more. They come up to me and say, sir, Pitt, it's so good. The biggest Pitt.
My my storyline, and I struggled with how exactly to phrase it, but I think I landed on the one that feels cleanest to me. I think a 10-win team is slumbering in the Big Ten West, college football's division that has gone the longest without putting a team in the college football playoff, or before that, the BCS championship. Nobody currently in the Big Ten West is projected to win even 9 games. Nebraska's got the highest that I found with an 8.5. Wisconsin's at 8. Iowa's at 7.5. I think Minnesota's at 7. But I think, and I have no reason to believe this, and I'm just choosing to chain myself to the weird mast that is the Big Ten West. I think there is one team, and I don't know which one it is, amongst this group that is going to have a surprisingly good season and probably in the process fuck something up for somebody else. I don't know if that's Iowa beating a, like, Iowa State team that looks like it could have one of its best seasons in years. I don't know if this is one of these teams knocking off Michigan or Penn State. And again, no idea which one it is. I just feel very, like, I have this feeling that somebody in the Big Ten West is going to be a 10-game winner this year.
10? That's it?
Yeah.
I think there was some kind of mnemonic device we could use.
Did you actually mean 12, Ryan?
Can we go 11?
Can you give me 10 prior to the conference championship game?
I want a Big Ten West team with like queasy playoff hopes, where they're like, we could make it, but do we really want to?
Look, 10 or more accomplishes that.
Okay. If we're calling it 10 plus.
If somebody's, yeah, I'm not saying they're going to hit 10 right on, like, if somebody hits 11,
I just want you to aim as high as you can.
I think 10 is reasonable, considering that there is nobody who is clearly in the stratosphere right now, and that I want to believe that this will work, and I don't need, like, all of these teams to enter October already with 2 losses and be like, well, fuck, all right. Good job, me.
I'm going to be so damn mad if you make a 10-win Northwestern team happen with this.
Oh, man.
So mad.
Northwest 10.
As a Medill grad, that will infuriate me, because it will distract from our academic excellence.
The only team that I am confident won't do this, Illinois.
Yeah.
I'm not at all worried about Illinois being it. The other 6 teams in the division, like, it maybe seems feasible. I do need Illinois to lose all of its games, basically, though. Illinois, yeah. If you fuck this up for me, I'm going to be really pissed.
Yeah, you need them to be West Rutgers.
Yes, which they pretty much are in many years. Yeah. So,
have you looked at Nebraska's schedule? Because I think it'll get you up to 11.
I think it's possible, but, you know, they've got...
Hey, where are my manners? Happy Scott Frost week, everybody.
Happy Scott Frost month. Yeah.
Frostmas?
Yeah, Nebraska's got a shot at it.
Scott Timber.
Wisconsin's schedule is not, like, crazy right now.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Wisconsin did 12 recently, so maybe you should go for 12.
Listen, stop trying to goad me into this.
Wait, what is the cutoff point for 10 wins? Is it, like, bowls and everything?
No, I'm saying at the end. So, like, if you look at their helmet schedule, I'm just saying regular season. So it doesn't count if they make the conference championship game, but they only have 9. I don't get it. They have to win 10 regular season games.
Okay, good.
How,
I like it.
How delighted would you be if for the next 5 years under Paul Chryst, Wisconsin only put up win totals of 6 or 12? That's how we do it, bro. We don't break them up.
It's like, it's just bulking and cutting.
Yeah, it's just bulking and cutting. Yeah, I gotta take it down to a 6-pack. Next year though, I'm going for the 12.
That's the new term for bowl eligibility. we got a 6-pack.
That's it. Yeah. W's. What are you doing tonight? Oh, I'm gonna stay bowl eligible, but you know, tomorrow night I might be getting a 12-er. Might be going for the gold championship.
So when I'm cranky, I don't know, in 5 weeks. You all are free to remind me. It's because I chose to care about every team except, again, Illinois in the Big Ten West.
Also, you're moving in the middle of a football season.
Shh! Nobody knows that yet.
Oh, cool.
There is a very possible scenario here where, like, halfway through the season, I'm like, okay, got a couple teams in the mix, and they all shot each other. Cool. Somehow Iowa and Nebraska beat each other twice.
It's that NFC North schedule.
That's if Iowa and Nebraska played each other twice, you wouldn't blink, right? I don't think it would.
No,
it would be on the schedule, and it'd be 3 weeks after they played the last time, and nobody would. Gus Johnson would be like, Gus Johnson here playing for the first time this year. We've got Iowa and Nebraska.
One of the New Mexico schools is playing Liberty twice this year, yeah. So like, why not?
Why not? Wake Forest and UNC are playing a non-conference game. There are no rules. There are no rules.
Did you see that North Carolina is trying to start a new tradition?
Yeah, where'd they come up with that one?
Mm-hmm. Of lighting the tower in the color of the university.
Hmm. Who's their head coach?
That'd be Mac Brown. You know, in an entirely original that I had.
Like his son?
No, the unretired Mac Brown.
Like his idiot nephew?
No, like actual Mac Brown, yeah.
Like the former player from like 10 years ago, right?
God, please let his son-in-law like accidentally level the tower at UNC trying to light it blue.
I'm just concerned that he's going to be like snowblind putting on all that blue at once.
I'm excited for him to like try to start a hook 'em horns, but you have to like curl your fingers.
A ram horns. I feel like the statute of limitations has run out to the point where a brand new Longhorn Network staffer once was trying to get Mac Brown set up for an interview, and he refused to acknowledge this woman's presence in the room as she was like trying to get him fitted with a microphone and whatnot because it was dead of winter and she had a red scarf on. And he was like the opposite of a bull. Like, he ignored her like a toddler until someone came up to her from Texas and was like, and she took off the scarf and he's like, well, hello. And then acted like he was friendly.
Like she just materialized.
Yes. It's been long enough now. And I think everybody involved in that particular situation has moved on. But yeah, man. Oh, God.
The ramp.
You can see now why I was never a fighter pilot.
Those are still NC State colors. So we still got Ryan. I've tried to do the ram hand sign. I think I've given myself a cramp.
It hurts
this
a
hand
lot.
Sign sucks.
The ramp.
Let's make it a thing.
The ram cramp. The cramp. You can't spell ram without cramp.
Cramp them.
Cramp them.
Cramp them rams.
So cramp humid here. Oh, God.
I got the heel cramps.
The ram horn network would be incredible because you know that one show could just be Jerry Stackhouse beats the shit out of people. That's it. Just Jerry Stackhouse handing out two pieces to random people in Kidston, North Carolina. Let's roll, y'all.
Anyway, whenever anything goes awry with UNC this season, and it will, we just blame Mac Brown's lack of object permanence.
How am I supposed to function as a head coach without a TV network devoted to my
Please team? Don't leave me alone with all this food.
I
tend to bloat.